From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. So it's that time of the year when we tend to look back at the year that was. And for many people, 2016 was the type of year that could not be gone quick enough. But we're there. It's the end, and here at Reveal, we're beginning to reflect on all the issues we've covered. Now, we've done stories from workers' abuse to toxic schools, from women's sports to private prisons. Yeah, I know it's not exactly a fun group of episodes, but, I mean, we do serious journalism, and that's what you come here for, right? We dig into topics that affect people's lives. But we decided to round out this season with something a little different. We asked you, our listeners, to tell us about your picks for the best stories from this year. Brittany Jones wrote that she loved this episode entitled, Who's Getting Rich Off Your Student Debt?
They've literally reversed the whole idea of helping students and turned it into a business right underneath all of our noses without anyone even really realizing, like, wow, you know, here's people making a lot of money off of this.
Tomas liked our sonic tribute to the victims of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. Ryan was listening to our podcast on a cross-country trip. He couldn't get out of the car to set up his tent because he had to hear how our story on the daycare system in Alabama would end.
With the exemption, she could open up basically anywhere and be okay with it. The law is unfortunate. It does not protect the kids.
But one of the most popular episodes this year was Russia's new scapegoats. Understanding what's going on in Russia has become more important since the FBI and the CIA accused Russia of interfering with the U.S. election to help Donald Trump win the White House. And there are other connections. Since the election, white supremacists have come forward praising both Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. They say one reason they like Putin is because he's an aggressive protector of traditional Christian values. Now, Putin has never promoted white supremacy. But he has targeted minority groups, including the LGBT community. Many people who know Putin say he's not a homophobe, but he's used an anti-gay agenda to manipulate the Russian public and suppress political dissent. We investigated how that played out in a show that ran earlier this year, starting with the story of Lyosha Gorshkov. He told me that by the summer of 2014, life in Russia had become impossible for him.
Every single day, it was like, I don't know, prison. And I spent last 6 months in Russia and I feared that I will be put in jail, I will be killed, I will be beat.
He was so afraid for his life that he avoided going home to his apartment and instead stayed with a friend. But he was still in danger. He felt he had no choice but to leave.
And I couldn't tell anybody. I couldn't tell my mom, I couldn't tell my close friends, and it was indescribable. And I just bought tickets, got flight, and got here in the United States.
Lyosha wasn't a fugitive, he hadn't committed a crime, there wasn't a loan shark hunting him down for money.
Actually, I'm here because I escaped from my country, because I was persecuted as a gay and humiliated, and it was only one chance to get out of there.
So can you describe for me, because I think most Americans don't really know or understand what's happening in Russia right now. So can you kind of describe for me the daily reality for gay and lesbian people in Russia?
Sure. It's a very complicated question because by the constitution, Russia is a very democratic country. But in reality, you will face a lot of difficulties because now right-wing activists, different groups of people call themselves traditionalists, rise up. And if you are gay, lesbian, especially transgender, you will be not only beaten, but you will be killed. And government keeps targeting LGBT population because it's easiest target.
And it's been just over the past few years that the gay community has become a target in Russia. Now, that's not to say homophobia and gay bashing didn't exist before. They did. But things for the LGBT community had been gradually getting easier. In the years after the collapse of the Soviet Union, Russian society was steadily becoming more accepting, more open. All that changed when a series of laws were passed that made gay and lesbian Russians outsiders in their own country. For Leosha, it meant the end of a successful career.
I was a professor at the university for the last 13 years, and I was open gay. And 2013, I became a deputy dean of student affairs. So because I became a deputy dean, I became a target for Federal Security Service.
The Federal Security Service is the modern version of the KGB. It's the main security agency in the country. And there was an agent now working at the university as a security advisor. One day, he called Leosha into his office.
I came over and he shut the door and started to engage me, tried to engage me in some activities, you know?
He wanted Leosha to tell him the names of any communists or homosexuals he knew. The agent said they were a threat to the nation, but it didn't stop there.
He would follow me every single week, calling me, looking for me at the university, and I realized that he's going to catch me. He's going to do something to kick me from the system.
And not long afterwards, it happened. A bogus article about Leosha and a colleague circulated on social media at the university.
And it said that those people tried to promote sodomy, literally, and you have to fire them. And it was a scandalous article, and I realized this is time I have to do something. And it was a very tough experience.
What does that feel like to be a part of a group of people that basically the government ignores at best and at worst, you know, encourages that kind of violence against?
You know, I've got some ambiguous feelings about this because from the one side, it's fear. It's a fear, of course. It's very dangerous, and you always under some kind of feelings that you could be the next. But from the other hand, it gives you strength. It separated you from the majority, and you understand that you have to fight. So basically, I've got tough skin because of my identity.
These days, Leosha lives in New York and is seeking asylum in the U.S. He's the coordinator for RUSA LGBT, an American organization that helps people like him who have fled Russia and neighboring countries out of fear. In a typical week, he says he has three new arrivals. So, how did things get so bad for the LGBT community in Russia? That's what we wanted to find out. So we teamed up with Coda Story, an online news organization that does in-depth crisis reporting. We focused on St. Petersburg, which has become the epicenter of homophobia in Russia. What you're about to hear is disturbing. But we feel that it's the only way to truly understand what's happening inside of Russia. Here's reporter Amy McKinnon.
My tickets were booked, and I was packing my bag when I received a message from a friend in St. Petersburg. A journalist, Dmitry Silikin, had been murdered. Russia can be a dangerous place for journalists. Over the years, dozens have been killed for getting on the wrong side of corrupt politicians and gang bosses. But this explanation just didn't fit for Dmitry. He was an arts reporter. He reviewed the city's ballet and opera. But Dmitry's friends and local media believe that Dmitry was killed because he was gay. When I arrive in St. Petersburg, I seek out Dmitry's friends and colleagues to find out more about what happened. Tatiana Moskvina was best friends with Dmitry since college. And when I meet her at her home, she is visibly still in shock.
When I try and imagine that our neat, intelligent Dmitry was killed with a knife in the tidy apartment where I have been, he cleaned it twice a week. Everything had its place, books, CDs. A vase of flowers was carefully placed on the windowsill. I cannot imagine that apartment covered in blood.
Police believe Dmitry met his killer on an online dating site and invited the man to his apartment. Homophobic vigilantes have been known to prowl these sites, luring gay men and women out on dates, only to humiliate, attack, or even kill them. When the police found Dmitry, he was lying in a pool of blood with multiple stab wounds. his killer had taken his cell phone, his laptop and house keys, leaving him trapped to bleed to death in his own home. By the time I meet Tatiana, the police have arrested a 21-year-old student, Sergei Kosyarov, on suspicion of murder. Local media reported that during police questioning, he said that his life was, quote, a crusade against certain social groups, and that he'd asked to be referred to as the cleaner. Kosyarov's lawyer has dismissed these statements as total nonsense, but Tatiana believes the police have got their guy. The case is closed, she tells me with a heavy sigh.
Imagine, all his life Dmitry wrote about art and culture, and he ended up in the crime pages.
I go to the offices of St. Petersburg Delavoy, where Dmitry worked for years. It's the city's leading business newspaper, and it's well known for its independent stance. When I meet with Dmitry's editor, another Dmitry, Dmitry Grozny, he blames politicians and state-owned media for stirring up this hatred.
In Russia now, there is such a concentrated amount of hatred. At any given time, you can just turn on the TV and watch the news. It's Orwellian, the five-minute hate, where they tell people to hate their neighbors, and unfortunately, it's directed towards gay people.
I head to St. Isaac Square, a busy plaza in the center of the city. It is emblematic of St. Petersburg's imperial style and is dominated by the Marinsky Palace, built by Tsar Nicholas as a gift to his daughter. It's now home to the St. Petersburg City Legislature. I'm here to meet a member of the Assembly, Vitaly Milonov. In 2012, he became the face of homophobia here when he masterminded the city's infamous gay propaganda law. The law is so vaguely worded and bizarre that it can be difficult to explain. It's based on the assumption that LGBT people propagandize to children by supposedly spreading their ideas to them. So the law prohibits any public portrayals of LGBT issues in a positive or even neutral way. So that means no articles in magazines, no gay characters on TV, no support for LGBT kids in school, nothing. The St. Petersburg law paved the way for a nationwide ban 1 year later. Milonov is also the guy who said that gay athletes could be arrested at the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. He's a busy man, but he readily agrees to meet me in his office. While I wait, I chat with some of his staff members, two giggly interns and his assistant, Ilya. I ask them what they think of their boss's sponsorship of the gay propaganda law.
Like the spring's first day, like the sunshine, homophobia is a beautiful. That's a rainbow.
Just in case you didn't catch that, Ilya is comparing homophobia to spring's first day. He says it is a beautiful thing, like a rainbow. I get the signal that Milonov is ready and I'm shown to his office. Now, before I continue, I just want to give a quick heads up. Milonov is known for making controversial statements, so I'm expecting to hear some of the slurs and hate speech that he is infamous for. He shifts uncomfortably in his chair and scarcely makes eye contact during our interview.
Why did you feel it was necessary to introduce such a bill?
We have to face moral dangers, moral factors of present world, like homosexual propaganda, which is disgusting, immoral, disease of a modern anti-Christian society.
Milonov is a devoutly religious man. The walls of his room are lined with religious icons and a black flag which reads, Orthodoxy or Death, hangs behind his desk. There is no nationwide monitoring of hate crimes committed against LGBT people in Russia. Local and international rights groups piece together what they can, and both have reported a sharp increase in homophobic and transphobic violence since the gay propaganda law was passed. Human Rights Watch blames this violence on the anti-gay rhetoric coming from politicians and state media. I ask Milonov what he makes of this.
Human Rights Watch is a cheap piece of I'm sorry for my French. And we have no serious figures of persons, you know, of violence against homosexuals. There is quite a big number of criminal cases that are connected with the homosexuals, because many homosexuals at the same time they love little kids.
Do you have any evidence of that?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Where?
It's just a statistics.
This anti-gay myth is standard rhetoric, not just in Russia, but anywhere that people are attacking the LGBT community. And in St. Petersburg, these kind of statements have inspired violence against LGBT people, the kind of violence that police believe led to the murder of Dmitry Silikin, which I ask about next.
Well, if I could give you a very recent example here in St. Petersburg, I'm sure you heard about the murder of the journalist Dmitry Silikin, who was stabbed in his apartment, and it's believed that this was motivated by the fact that he was gay. And the young man who killed him...
I know this case.
And local media have reported that he was an admirer of yours.
This guy, what happened with him? This old faggot... got acquainted via the internet with the young guy, and he invited him to his house, either to rape him. Main reason for this invitation was sexual harassment.
But that's not what the police believe at all. They think that the suspected murderer set up the date with Dmitry with the intention to kill him. My interview with Milonov goes on for a while, and he continues to spout the hate-filled propaganda that has turned this cultured city into the epicenter of the anti-gay movement in Russia. The next day, I managed to set up an interview with one of the city's most infamous anti-gay vigilantes, Timur Bulatov. Like Dmitry's suspected killer, he also calls himself the cleaner. Bulatov has not been known to be violent, but he does seek to destroy the livelihoods of LGBT people by combing through the social media accounts of St. Petersburg teachers, singling out the ones he suspects of being gay and reporting them to their schools. We agree to meet at his office in the district council building, but as I'm in the taxi on my way there, he messages me with a different meeting point. This last-minute switch makes me nervous. We meet at his rented office, a cramped and claustrophobic room. The rest of the building seems to be empty. As I walk in, I notice a camera set up on a tripod so that he can film whatever happens next. Bulatov's assistant, a tall man in a roll-neck sweatshirt, sits in the corner of the room and fixes a silent stare on us. The feeling that maybe I've been set up doesn't seem so paranoid anymore, given how many journalists have been attacked for their reporting here in Russia. I ask Bulatov to introduce himself, and he jumps straight to the point.
We fight for the unifying moral issues of traditional family values, for faith, for the fatherland, for the fight for statehood.
Bulatov is deeply proud of his work and boasts about how many teachers he claims to have gotten fired.
At first it was like 29, but now it's more like 50. Some left with a scandal, went through the courts. The more prudent perverts, who understand their perversion, chose to quit themselves.
It's not actually illegal in Russia to be a teacher if you're gay. But if a teacher is publicly outed, the stigma is so strong that they won't last long in their position. Bulatov speaks with such a single-minded hatred of LGBT people that at one point he actually breaks out into a sweat. When I ask what he thinks of the attacks on LGBT people in the city, he says he doesn't condone violence against homosexuals, but he certainly doesn't condemn it either.
Well, society reacts the way it reacts. Why are we always talking about gay people as victims? Why are we not talking about the actions of these homosexuals, these lesbians and faggots? What they do to provoke a reaction?
Halfway through the interview, I notice a handgun sitting on the table next to him. I'm too afraid to ask what it's for. By the time I leave, I am so on edge that I head straight to a dive bar across the street and settle my nerves with a shot of vodka. I'm glad the interview is over, but it's not long before I bump into Bulatov again.
I'm here in St. Petersburg on the 15th of April. It's actually the Day of Silence. It's an international day used by LGBT activists in many countries as kind of day of remembrance for people who've been killed or harassed or bullied for being gay. Local activists have organised a meeting here in the centre of St. Petersburg in front of the train station. Now, events like this are quite often broken up by skinheads or by the police, so I'm interested to see how this is going to go. There's already a very heavy police presence. I can see a truck of the OMON, which is the Russian Special Forces, sitting out front. Timur Bulatov, who we met yesterday, has shown up to disrupt the event. He's got a broom with a toy rat hanging off it. The toy rat is holding rainbow flags. And he's walking around telling people watching that these are perverts. So there's a group of 24 or so young activists. I watch them put duct tape over their mouths. It's a symbolic gesture of silence. And they walk down the city's main street, Nevsky Prospekt. Along the way, I get chatting to Mark, an activist for a local LGBT group called Coming Out. Mark's job today is to document any acts of hate speech or homophobic violence at the demonstration. As a transgender person himself, Mark is at an even greater risk of being harassed or attacked on the street. He tells me that at today's protest, someone has already verbally attacked one of their activists.
Who was it? Who tried to attack him?
Just some more guy. He was very young. He was speaking just some government propaganda, like, we are Orthodox country, we have traditions, you have no place here.
Does it frighten you?
No. Not now. I was very frightened before. But then my friend committed a suicide because of homophobia. Then I understood that silence will not help anyone and I must speak for myself and for those who cannot speak themselves.
Just moments after we speak, the police show up with a loudspeaker telling everyone that the protest is illegal. In Russia, to hold any kind of protest or demonstration which involves more than just one person, you have to go to the city to get a special permit. Out of nowhere, the police just rush at the protesters and line them up against the wall. Some of them stand with their mouths still taped up in silence, but others try and reason with the police. And then, seemingly at random, seven of the activists are just picked out of the lineup and taken away to police vans parked around the corner. The next day, I head down to one of the city's small LGBT community centres. It's in the heart of the city, but tucked away in a basement, unmarked. You'd never guess it was here. I'm greeted by a veteran of the city's LGBT activism movement, Alexei. He is asked that we don't use his last name, out of fear that he could be targeted. It's a humble space, three rooms and hardly any furniture. But despite their tiny budget, they've done what they can to make it cosy. A number of young activists from the centre were arrested at yesterday's demonstration. They were charged $200 each for participating in an unsanctioned protest. That's a small fortune in a country where the national minimum wage is just $109 per month. They've gathered here tonight to discuss what happened yesterday. They ask for privacy, so I step into the next room to have a chat with Alexei.
It's very important to us to protect the right to be who we are, yeah? As for me, I have got so much support. I'm ready to help to the people around in return.
It's been a long week in St. Petersburg, and I am exhausted by all the hatred that I have seen. But when I ask Alexei if he has hope for the future, he says he does.
Hope. I do. I do.
Despite everything that's going on, he speaks with such determination, such optimism, that his voice begins to crack.
We are at risk, but my optimism helps me to believe that everything will be good, sooner or later. Not now, not in a year, not in 3 years, but in 20 years, everything will be fine. I'm sure.
That report was from Amy McKinnon of Coda Story. The crackdown on the LGBT community in St. Petersburg became a blueprint for Vladimir Putin's national anti-gay agenda. But we don't need to go halfway around the world to find that kind of intolerance. We can find it in our own backyard.
The ideal of a white ethnostate, and it is an ideal, is something that I think we should think about in the sense of what could come after America. It's kind of like a grand goal.
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.